Hello and welcome to the Poetry Exchange. I'm Fiona Bennett.
And I'm Michael Schaefer.
Well, it's fantastic to be back and to be bringing a conversation this week from our recent trip to Manchester and a wonderful couple of days there in Manchester Central Library, wasn't it, Michael?
I was really impressed. I don't think I've ever been to a library quite that vibrant and buzzy, full of all sorts of different people doing different things. They've got music rooms where you can play instruments, and it's just really well used. It feels like a fantastic example of what libraries can be. So if you're anywhere near Manchester, get yourself down to the library.
Yeah. Absolutely, absolutely. And we were there as part of International Mother Languages Day, because Manchester has recently been given the recognition of being a UNESCO City of Literature. Mm. And so it was wonderful to have a connection into that and to kind of be part of that. And also with the co-hosting at the library with Manchester's Creative Writing School from Manchester Metropolitan University. So it was lovely to be kind of feeling part of that really extraordinary literature scene that is Manchester.
Yeah, and we were so warmly welcomed by everybody there. So, our thanks to everyone for giving us such a great couple of days. And we also met some fantastic people and some fantastic poems. Mm. And it's kind of amazing, I think, that we've been doing this now for 3 years.
Yeah.
And this is the first time we've had somebody bring in a Dylan Thomas poem. And he's a giant. He's a titan.
You took those words out of my mouth, Michael.
Oh, did I?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think that's great.
Yeah. And this was also one of those conversations that was, because usually when we're doing this, we have our slots that people can book into, but this was one of those lovely extra slots that we made happen because we met someone who's working there, and it felt like it would be great just to include, we just wanted to find out about the poem that had been a friend to her, and so we did.
Yeah, it's terrific. Let's be honest now, Fee. We had a late cancellation.
Okay, all right.
And rather brilliantly, you went and found Angela, who you'd met before, and asked her if she wanted to come and talk to us, if she had a poem that had been a friend to her. And I think she accepted kind of immediately.
Yes, I knew she would.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I don't, you know, I'm not into, you know, dragging people in unwillingly to this experience.
And she was terrific. So you'll be listening to myself and Fiona talking about The Force That Through the Green Fuse Drives the Flower by Dylan Thomas, the poem that's been a friend to Angela. It would be terrific to hear you read this poem, if that would be all right.
Sure.
Thank you.
I'll probably go a bit Welsh when
Even better.
The force that through the green fuse drives the flower drives my green age, that blasts the roots of trees is my destroyer, and I am dumb to tell the crooked rose my youth is bent by the same wintry fever. The force that drives the water through the rocks drives my red blood, that dries the mouthing streams turns mine to wax, and I am dumb to mouth into my veins how at the mountain spring the same mouth sucks. The hand that whirls the water in the pool stirs the quicksand, that ropes the blowing wind hauls my shroud sail, and I am dumb to tell the hanging man how of my clay is made the hangman's lime. The lips of time leech to the fountainhead, love drips and gathers, but the fallen blood shall calm her sores, and I am dumb to tell a weather's wind how time has ticked a heaven round the stars, and I am dumb to tell the lover's tomb how at my sheet goes the same crooked worm.
Brilliantly read.
Amazing. Shall I start with my confession?
Yeah.
She said, I think that's the first Dylan Thomas poem I've ever heard.
Oh.
Don't know any.
Oh, please let it be not the last.
After that, Angela, I don't think it will be.
I don't think it will be. That was lovely then. How did it feel just then, just reading it then?
It was good. It's been a long time since I've actually read that one aloud. So it was good to actually feel it again, because I feel poems when I read them. If I'm reading poetry at home, I'll normally walk around actually reading it, because it's very much about sound for me.
Yeah.
I mean, when I'm writing my own poetry, I have to actually speak it to make sure that it feels right. I was for a long time what people would describe as a page poet, in that I didn't do performance until fairly recently. Mm. I've always needed to hear my poems. It's no good just seeing them written down. Mm. And poets that I love tend to be poets that I love the sound of.
And that's also true for Dylan Thomas, isn't it?
Oh, very much so.
Himself, I think.
Yeah, I mean, if you've heard his own recordings, his poems, you can tell he inhabits those poems. Mm. Obviously, it's a good Welsh voice. He's perfect for poetry anyway. I mean, I've lost most of my accent, but bits of it creep in now and again. Mm. But it's the whole music and poetry thing.
Mm, lovely.
When did you first come across this one?
When I was a teenager, probably about 13, 14.
At school?
At school, oh yes.
In Wales?
In Wales.
Whereabouts in Wales?
The Rhondda Valley, the old mining territories. My granddad used to work in the mines. And the Rhondda is a very, very green place. So you're very much in nature there, even though it's also the coal mines and the terraced houses. You go from your terraced house and you go up the hills, and there are sheep wandering around, and so yeah.
And you're right there.
Yeah,
in the countryside. Mm.
And a lot of this poem spoke to that sort of whole adolescent thing, is that sort of that beginning to understand mortality and connection. And also, I just loved the way the words sounded. And I think Dylan Thomas really was part of my first understanding of how words can really, really affect you, really hit you in the gut.
It's sort of visceral, isn't it, the language somehow?
Absolutely. The lips of time leech to the fountainhead, love drips and gathers. Yeah, that sort of totally...
It is always really sort of rooted in the sound and the music of it, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, Dylan Thomas does that a lot. The other Dylan Thomas poem, which really, really affected me, was Do Not Go Gentle Into That Good Night, which I think more people will know than this one. Mm. And that, in fact, I mean, in a different way, it taught me a lot about shape of poetry.
Mm. Yes.
And this is more about the guts of the poetry.
Lovely, yeah.
So, I mean, even Do Not Go Gentle's got the guts, but it's also got the shape.
Yeah.
I don't know if I always understand what's happening here.
I don't always understand what's happening. Any really good poem, you don't all understand everything all at once, and sometimes you don't understand everything ever, but you know it's there, and there's something that connects with you, I think.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's beautiful.
I mean, that's the thing with Dylan Thomas. There are bits of Dylan Thomas poems where I think, well, I know what it means in a gut sense, but if you ask me to sort of parse it, to explain it, you know, word by word, why is it this word, not that word? Because it needs to be that word, but don't ask me to tell you why.
It's like it's understood in a felt sense.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That's it. Understood in the body and not the head.
Yeah.
You know.
Mm-hmm. I mean, if you actually look at it, the structure, it is quite intellectual in a sense. You know, there's a balancing of this in nature with this in myself. I'm dumb to tell the crooked rose my youth is bent by the same wintry fever. That sort of, I can't tell my body, myself, about this thing, which is parallel with this thing in nature. And it's that pattern all the way through.
Yes, I was going to ask about that. That repetition of and I am done.
Yeah.
What's that about for you?
It's about sort of how that you know these things, but you can't necessarily communicate with the other things to say, look, I'm like you. Nature can affect you, but you can't quite give that back. I'm inarticulate.
It's like the same energy that's inside this wind or inside this rose or inside this water is in me, but I can't speak back to it in the way that it can make me feel. It can make me feel. It can batter me, but I can't, with my words, come back at it, even though that is what he's doing in the poem.
Yeah,
and it's also sort of, in a sense, you can't comfort, because it's talking about, you know, I can't comfort the rose for being crooked by saying, look, that thing that's affecting you, that's making you aged, become crooked, is going to affect me too. A lot of it is about mortality, inarticulacy, and it's the sort of thing that really gets you when you're 15.
Well, you say this, but I mean, I was very struck by that when you said it. You know, I met it when I was 17, and it was all about mortality and connection. And I'm not sure I was onto mortality and connection when I was 15, Michael. I don't know about you, but
certainly wasn't.
Can you say any more about that? I mean,
maybe I was just a strange child, possibly.
No, I'm sure not.
I was always a sort of a reading child, and a dreaming child, if you like. I was one of these children who'd sit and watch ants building a nest. I wasn't a particularly typical child. I read everything I could lay my hands on, which meant that by the time I was about 9 or 10, I'd read everything in the children's library, so I was using my parents' tickets to read all the adult library books. maybe that's why I wasn't very typical in that sense.
And I'm very interested in, at that time and also now, how you connect to my green age.
Green as in young. So it was the sort of the life that's in the flowers. It is also the life that's in me, so that connection with nature.
And if you were feeling those kinds of things as a dreaming child or young person, to then find in a book that's in school?
I came across it in school, but then I got my parents to get me a copy of the collected poems of Dylan Thomas. Mm. My Christmas lists were always books, and mostly poetry. When I was reading Robert Graves and E.E. Cummings, I was really upset because my parents got me what they thought was the complete collected works of E.E. Cummings, but of course it came in two volumes, but it didn't say volume one and volume two, it said the years or whatever.
So they
got me one half of it, and it was the half with it which had the index in, so I could see which poems I didn't have. I eventually managed to get the other volume.
That's hilarious.
Yeah. So it is for me, poetry. Yeah, it is very much a sort of like gut thing as well. I mean, I love people who are clever with words, but being clever with words isn't enough.
And is this the connection with nature through this poem that you spoke about? Was that also you? Was it either reading or being in nature and being outside? You were on the edge of, you know, in the
pit town. I used to go sort of wandering up on the hills on my own. You took a sandwich with you, came back for tea.
And, you know, a child that read prodigiously, and here we are now in Manchester Central Library, and I'm meeting you for the first time, and you work here in the library?
Yes, I work in the library.
Are there opportunities for you now to be in this kind of connection with nature that was on your doorstep as a kid?
Not as much, by a long way. But I mean, I think I've gone more towards the sort of the whole words thing rather than the nature thing.
Yeah.
I've do performance poetry, just maybe open mic, so I've done a few guest slots, but that has only been a fairly recent thing. So yeah,
that requires some bravery, I would imagine.
I don't know. I think I become somebody different when I'm on stage. When I started off, I'd quite often do a whole sort of, because I don't wear makeup normally, I'd do a whole sort of makeup and glitter and...
Brilliant.
Yeah.
Wow.
An alter ego.
A whole persona.
An alter ego. Yeah,
persona. Right. So then when you're on stage, it's not you, it's the poet.
But that makes sense that you would, you know, this interest in the poem aloud and the speaking and the embodying. I was very struck when you spoke... Initially, you weren't just talking about reading it aloud, you were talking about walking and reading it aloud.
Oh, yeah.
You know, that is full engagement of the full body and the breath with the utterance of the thing. And actually, it seems inevitable, therefore, that you would end up needing to perform almost in order to kind of, you know, have that connection of body to emitting of poem.
Yeah, I mean, quite often I'll act out to some extent my poems as well.
I want to ask you about, in fact, what I'd like to ask you, could you read the third stanza again and then just tell me something about what comes up for you as you read that?
The hand that whirls the water in the pool stirs the quicksand that ropes the blowing wind hauls my shroud sail, and I am dumb to tell the hanging man how of my clay is made the hangman's lime. Yeah, that one's not an easy stanza to... That's one I wouldn't be able to parse in that sense. But, I mean, the sense I get, especially the last part, I'm dumb to tell the hanging man how of my clay is made the hangman's lime. I'm part of that destruction as well as experiencing the destruction.
I love that pattern. I mean, the pattern is very tight, isn't it, in it? Because, you know, the structure of every single stanza is exactly... as it is, the force, the hand, the lips, that does this. I mean, even to the length of the line, is my destroyer, turns mine to wax, hauls my shroud.
Oh yeah, the rhythm is the same through each stanza until you get to the end and you've got that shortened bit that's a final, and this is the thing that I'm really dumb to tell. It kind of feels like this is the hardest thing, in a sense, to say that you can't say.
Just read that for us, Angela.
And I am dumb to tell the lover's tomb how at my sheet goes the same crooked worm.
Give me a sense of what you get from that.
I actually, the lover's tomb, I always get an image of Romeo and Juliet in there. I don't know whether Dylan meant it to be there, but that's where it is for me. And the whole concept of the tragic lover... And death is coming, the crooked worm, which is the medieval concept of the maggot, the sheet, the winding sheet. Yes, I too will die, be gnawed by the worms.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
but I can't tell the lovers this. And for them, their tragedy is like unique to them.
That's very good, isn't it? That's very good.
Yeah, I love the alliteration there. I do like the use of alliteration in poetry. It's I am dumb to tell the weather's wind how time has ticked to heaven round the stars. And you think, if only he hadn't drunk himself to death, but then you think, if he hadn't been the sort of man who was going to drink himself to death, would he have written the same poems? And probably not.
No, I'm not sure that the force... that through the green fuse was driving him would have been the same.
I'm interested to know how this has changed for you over the years.
I mean, I think in some ways it's a fixed point in my past, but in some ways, I mean, as an older person, I can actually look back on my younger self and think, well, yes, actually, you were a bit of a melodramatic little so-and-so, and that's why you liked it so much.
We often ask people, if this poem were a friend to you, what kind of a friend do you think it would be?
This poem, probably would be the sort of friend that I'd go out for a drink with and get sort of melancholy drunk with and have a good weep and then go, yeah, right, okay, let's go off and do something else.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
Brilliant. Brilliant.
Right. Is it that sort of melancholy for a time past in a way, or is it, does the melancholy come from what's actually in the poem, or just the way it makes you feel when you read it?
I think it's sort of more that sort of slight melodrama, because there is a slight melodrama to it. Mm. And it's a sort of melodrama that I enjoyed. So it's like, yeah.
Let's go there, isn't it?
Yeah.
Sit and drink and talk about this stuff, you know?
Let's read that old love letter from the ex that I really wish I hadn't broken up with, and
do all that stuff that we know isn't terribly safe for our mental health or good for us or healthy or positive.
Excellent.
Let's just do all that dark stuff on with a bottle of bourbon and, you know, whatever.
That's great.
The force that through the green fuse drives the flower. The force that through the green fuse drives the flower drives my green age, that blasts the roots of trees is my destroyer. And I am dumb to tell the crooked rose my youth is bent by the same wintry fever. The force that drives the water through the rocks drives my red blood, that dries the mouthing streams turns mine to wax, and I am dumb to mouth unto my veins how at the mountain spring the same mouth sucks. The hand that whirls the water in the pool stirs the quicksand, that ropes the blowing wind hauls my shroud sail. And I am dumb to tell the hanging man how of my clay is made the hangman's lime. The lips of time leech to the fountain head. Love drips and gathers, but the fallen blood shall calm her sores. And I am dumb to tell a weather's wind how time has ticked a heaven round the stars. And I am dumb to tell the lover's tomb how at my sheet goes the same crooked worm.
That was Fiona with the gift reading at the end there. And Fee, I was just saying to you, I sort of almost can't fathom this. There's something about just the sounds of the words, the power of the sound of the words that, I don't know, it sort of does strange, funny things to my brain. I've been kind of slightly blown away by Dylan Thomas and this poem.
Well, then his work is out as he wanted it to be. I think, you know, you did say titan of poetry on the way in, and I think the feelings that Angela was kind of talking about of that embodiment of things and the kind of that in a sense it hit her being in all its ways. And I, you know, we go to poetry to go beyond language in its everyday way and yet through language. So, you know, music, painting, dance, they work beyond language because they are not of language. And in a sense, Dylan Thomas was able to dance with words, put it in that way.
Oh, I think that's
maybe
great.
And I do remember that there has been one or two other occasions where the poem that somebody's chosen to bring from a poet who has an enormous body of work has been an early poem, a poem from the poet as a young writer. And Dylan Thomas was 17, I believe, about 17, when he wrote this poem. And it just seems interesting that those early, I guess, where often it is happening out of that kind of rush of a need to articulate and understand and express the world that's happening in your young adulthood or in your kind of emerging self. That's what grabs the poet in the moment of writing, and that's what grabs the reader too.
Yeah.
yeah. somewhere.
I didn't know that. That's amazing. Mm. We had Roy McFarlane bring in a Langston Hughes poem, The Negro Speaks of Rivers, that was written when he was 19.
I think so, yeah.
So, yeah, something about that life force, perhaps. I don't know. So, of course, huge thanks to Angela for stepping in at the last minute so brilliantly and giving us a wonderful conversation. And to everybody again at Manchester Central Library. And, of course, to David Higham Literary Associates, Weidenfeld and Nicholson, who are the publishers, and the Dylan Thomas Trust. We're going to put a link on the information page to the Dylan Thomas Trust so you can find out more there. And this poem comes from...
The Collected Works, I think. Collected Poems of Dylan Thomas, the centenary edition, is where you can currently find it.
And we'll have details of that on the information page as well.
So wonderful to be in Manchester, and hopefully we might be able to share some of the other conversations that we had there, and hopefully we will also be returning and doing some more conversations perhaps in Manchester Central Library, but also very excitingly, opening soon will be the new poetry library in Manchester, which is being opened at Manchester Metropolitan University on Oxford Road. I think the building is nearly complete. I'm not sure of the exact date of opening, but I'm sure you will be finding out about it. It's going to be beautiful, it's going to be different, and it's going to take its place, I think, alongside the other fantastic poetry libraries of the UK. And we'll have, I'm sure, a strong link with them too, but we'll also do something different. So it'll be interesting to see how that is.
We're very grateful to have received some donations recently for the project. If you did want to donate us something, however small, you can go to the website and there's a button there that will point you the way.
We'll be back with you next month with more Poems as Friends. So until then, thank you for listening.